This is a recording of the open session of the Federal Election Commission held on April 29, 2010. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
We have a presentation from Tom Nerthen, Brenda Wheeler, and Joe Stoltz of the Audit Division, as well as Danita Lee and Larry Calvert from the Office of General Counsel. Please proceed when ready.
Good afternoon. Before the Commission is the final audit report on the Tennessee Democratic Party. The audit contains two findings. The first finding is entitled Non-Allocable Federal Election Activity Disclosed on Schedule H6. The finding contains three separate issues: polls, automated phone banks, and campaign rallies. The second finding is disclosure of disbursements. By way of background, the committee participated in the first audit hearing held on November 4, 2009. At the audit hearing, counsel for the committee addressed two issues that are contained in the first finding: polls and campaign rallies. The issue before the commission with respect to the polls is the polling activity meet the statutory definition of federal election activity, public communication, and telephone bank. The issue with respect to campaign rallies is, does the activity associated with certain vendor invoices represent generic campaign activity or coordinated party expenditures? I would gladly answer any questions you may have.
Thank you for that presentation. I think just right off the top of the hat, off the top of the discussion, I think the two items that have been from my discussions with my colleagues that have, I think, generated the most questions are the issues dealing with the polls and with the campaign rallies. And so I think that's probably where we'll start. Any questions or comments for either the auditors or the council? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you. On the polls, the standard is that it's got to be a phone bank that passes, right, in order to be included, right?
Yes, correct.
My problem with this is that it does, and I guess you could say that the phone bank passes, in that, you know, it both promotes and attacks Congressman Ford, former Congressman Ford. But I have a hard time believing that that's what Congress meant. I think it's got to be, I don't think when they said promote, support, attack, or oppose, they meant all at the same time. And when I look at some of these, if I thought this was a push poll, I would be like all over it, because I hate push polls. But I look at a poll that's testing questions like, Harold Ford Jr., he's slick, he's smooth, but his record, a little shaky. Ford is Tennessee's most liberal congressman. He campaigned in a church but took cash from Hollywood's top X-rated porn moguls. Ford talks values but voted to recognize gay marriage, voted for taxpayer abortions 10 times, and wants to give the abortion pill to our school children. I kind of doubt that personally, but that's what it said. Harold Ford, smooth talk, Hollywood values. Does this make you more likely to vote for Ford, less likely to vote for Ford? And there are various iterations there. And then there's a, you know, two questions later, it says, Ford believes we've got big problems in our country. The Iraq war, whether families can get health care, worries about our kids, and whether jobs will move 10,000 miles away. We desperately need change. Ford says it's not easy, but he's asking voters to take a chance by voting for him and for change. The results family and for change this year. Ford will remember it's Tennessee families he's working for, not the oil and drug companies. And he will work across party lines to deliver the results families deserve. With new leadership, we can have change. Ford won't let us down. Does this make you more likely to vote for Ford, less likely to vote for Ford? You know, we got questions that go both ways. And it seems to me that that is classic message testing. And when you combine that with the relatively small number of people that were contacted, you know, it doesn't sound like something that was being put out for persuasive purposes, but rather to test the message and see what would work best in various commercials. And of course, those are just two out of a long list of questions. But I guess that's the problem that I have with saying this is a phone bank that promotes, supports, attacks, or opposes, because actually it promotes, supports, attacks, and opposes all at the same time, all the same candidate. And, you know, there's also, there's message testing on, I guess, Corker he was running against, and I don't think they tested any positive messages on Corker. So I guess there are more, there's more positives on Ford than there are on Corker. There's only negatives on Corker, but still there's both positive and negative on Ford. I'm just having a hard time getting there.
In looking at the poll questions, we just believe there is some form of PASO. We don't believe it has to be all four components or one or two components, just a component of PASO. So that's where we are.
So you look at each question individually, say, well, that one passes, that one passes, that one passes.
Well, and if there is certain questions in there, then not every question has to contain PASO.
Yeah. I'm just not sure I can get there. I mean, I welcome input from council if you want to make any, but I just have a hard time thinking that's what Congress meant by PASO.
I'll try and address that. I think broadly speaking, we think the focus is the content of the message rather than the subjective intent. And by an interpretation arguing that the presence of both positive and negative statements are not PASO, our concern with that type of interpretation would be that a party communication that largely attacks or opposes a candidate and then simply includes a vague or kind of faint praise to the same candidate would then be removed from FEA, and thus a committee could would be able to circumvent the hard money requirements of the statute.
It's not really faint praise. Some of these questions were actually quite harsh, and I think they were legitimately trying to find out, you know, what their weaknesses were. And I suppose I should say up front that, you know, we already had a hearing, and council is back here again. This poor guy had to sit here all morning and wait for us to get to his matter. But, I mean, I obviously, you'll see from the tenor of my questions that I found that presentation to be helpful and persuasive, at least on this point. So I want to acknowledge council sitting at the last council got to sit at the table, and we don't have enough chairs for him. So now he's out there. But we've heard from him before.
If I can just follow up on what Commissioner Weintraub was saying. with respect to these particular polls, they would only be considered federal election activity if not only if they pass, but they first of all also have to be considered a public communication. And to be a public communication, it needs to be some form of general public political advertising. This was an issue that was discussed in an earlier MER that we dealt with, the DCCC MER, the MER 5835, in a statement of reasons that I joined along with my colleagues, Commissioners McGann and Hunter. We came to the conclusion that legitimate polls are not a form of general public political advertising. There are all sorts of considerations that one takes into account in terms of some of the things that Commissioner Weintraub brought up about the number of people who are contacted, the length of the call, the number of questions, the types of questions. Are you asking for demographic information? Is the purpose of the call to be purely an advocacy piece in which you're conveying information, trying to move voter behavior, or is this a legitimate, what I would say, a legitimate poll where you're collecting information to actually, in this case, test messages? And I think that, as Commissioner Weintraub pointed out, the fact that you're testing both positive and negative messages lends a lot of credence to the notion that these were legitimate polls testing messages. To me, the polls at issue had all the hallmarks of a legitimate poll, and to me, before we even need to get to the issue of whether or not these passed, I don't think that these are considered public communications under our relevant regulation, and for that reason, I can't support this element of finding one. Further questions or discussion? Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll keep this brief. I agree with the chairman on the analysis, although I also hear Commissioner Weintraub's point that, and I think we end up in the same place. As I understand Audit's position, The poll in question is a public communication because it comes within the definition of telephone bank.
Correct.
So telephone banks and polls are the same thing?
We believe yes.
Okay. But yet our own regulations treat them differently. For example, how to figure out the cost of a poll when you in-kind it versus the cost of a telephone bank, right? There's that whole polling reg that gets into how many days it's old and all that, and the value goes down and all that. There's a whole reg on polls. Okay. That doesn't apply to phone banks, right?
No, I think that's correct.
Because they're different. Even under our own regs, they're treated differently. They're not the same thing, right?
Okay.
Since they're not the same thing, polls are their own creature. They're not in the statute, and it's one of these things where Congress sort of, same thing as the last matter we just talked about, is in that Congress kind of knows what they're doing on some things, and they know about polls, and if they wanted to make polls a public communication, they would have said polls, particularly since there are specific regs on polls and that sort of thing. And to me, phone banks and polls are two different things. I've already said that in a statement of reason, so there really isn't a secret on that. But going forward, it seems to me that in this case, these were polls because they asked a number of questions, right? About how many questions were in the poll?
I believe each one may had anywhere from 80 to 90.
80 to 90 questions.
Counting the demographics.
Okay. Was this a tracking poll?
One is entitled a tracking poll, one's titled survey.
Okay.
It's two different polls.
All right. So tracking, we understand that's over usually multiple days, right? Understand that with polling?
Yes, okay.
So there's 80 to 90 questions. Push poll is one or two questions, maybe shorter, very short. That's not what this is at all. 80, 90 questions. Okay. Did they actually produce the polls in full?
Yes.
Including the marginals and crosstabs? You know what those are?
I don't believe, no. We just have the poll questions.
So you just have the questions? You have the answers?
No.
No, so you don't have even that. Okay, so you'd be, which doesn't surprise me because pollsters have to keep that confidential under their own standards. There's a national organization that explains all this. This is why pollsters really get prickly whenever the commission tries to subpoena the polls because they have their own duty, that sort of thing. So you have the questions, but you don't have any reason to think that there aren't marginals and crosstabs on these polls, right?
I'm not even sure I know what a margin or a crosstab is.
Okay. What makes it tough to sort of render an opinion about what a poll is if we're not really sure the components of a poll, right? It's in polls. There's when you do a poll, you accumulate the data and you provide essentially a chart. And the marginals are essentially the summary of the answers. The crosstabs give you breakdown within a certain demographic. So you may have a poll question that says, do you like or dislike Congressman so-and-so? And you may have 50% like him and 50% don't like him. But in the demographics, you may see older women over the age of 60 like him 70%. So that's the sort of thing. Phone banks... In your experience as an auditor, have you ever seen a telephone bank come up in an audit that has that kind of methodology behind it?
Probably not.
No, I wouldn't think so, because that's another reason why polls are different than phone banks. I share the concern of others with push polls. We don't want to have a system. We don't have to adopt some sort of policy or rule or whatever we want to call it, or holding in an audit that allows for push polls. But real polls are not public communications, really, for some of the reasons that the chairman cited and reasons we cited in our statement of reasons that's already out there. we cite an article by Stu Rothenberg, who's kind of one of the sort of top two handicappers. He has a whole article on this in his Rothenberg report that goes through the difference between poles and other sorts of phone banks and push poles and whatnot. That's as good a standard as any, because I know folks wonder, well, what's the rule? What's a pole and what's not a pole? It seems to me that to come in here and say, well, phone banks and poles are the same thing, when the law treats them differently, when the methodology is completely, there is no methodology in a phone bank. You're just delivering a message to somebody, where a pole, you're gathering information. You just can't make that argument. Moreover, with a pole, whether it passed those or not, I don't think is the question, because on some level, every poll is going to PASO somebody. Otherwise, you wouldn't be testing it, right? I mean, you're never going to do a poll. Well, you could do a poll, I guess. You're wasting your money. But you're not going to do a poll that says, who do you like for office? You're going to suggest an answer, which some would say is going to PASO someone in some form or other. Polls ask all sorts of questions for all sorts of reasons, and I note in your draft report, you raise issues like, well, you talks about federal candidates and this and that, and to go on a sort of somewhat of a related issue, let's assume it's a state candidate that's doing a poll, but yet there are a state party does a poll for a gubernatorial candidate, but yet there's a number of questions that ask about federal office holders. Is that legally significant? You'd probably say yes, and I would say no, just to sort of move this along. They ask questions like that to see who's performing or underperforming. They don't care about the answer or that sort of thing. My point of all this is that polling is its own category of political operation, I guess, for lack of a better word. It's not a phone bank. Our own regs treat them differently. So we can probably at some point talk about what's a push poll and what's not a push poll, because that is a very real concern. But the National Association of Pollsters, and I have the proper name here somewhere, actually has a whole white paper on the difference. And I think that would be a starting place if we want to go forward and think about giving some guidance, that if real pollsters tell you what a real poll is and what a real poll isn't, that's probably good enough for us, because we're not pollsters. You know, I've played them on TV, but I really am not a pollster.
Really?
Yes. I've looked at these polls. It is a poll. It's not a phone bank. It has the usual questions that test all sorts of information that some here seem to think, well, that must mean it's federal election activity because it talks a lot about federal office holders. Well, of course it does. That's what you do with a poll. If it's a phone bank, then it's going to turn on the size of the phone bank and all that, and that gets weird with polls too, because let's say the sample is 400 people. Is that federal election activity?
No.
Sample is 501 people. Is that federal election activity?
According to the definition, yes.
Interesting. But what if I tell you that to get a sample of 400 people, you had to make 10,000 phone calls? That change your answer?
No. Not if they made 10,000 calls.
Okay. So sample of 400, that would not be federal election activity, even though they made 10,000 phone calls?
No, that would be.
That would be.
I mean, you say a sample of 400. Are there 400 answers that you got out of 10,000
right.
calls?
Well, in polling, yes. Sample is the completed calls where you have data.
Okay.
That's the sample.
To get that many completed calls,
you need to make more calls than 400.
I believe we're relying on a statutory definition of a telephone bank, which only talks about 500 calls.
What if the poll questions are reversed, so it's not a substantially similar script? Because real polls actually change up the order of questions to avoid certain biases. For example, if you ask fave, unfave, meaning do you view this person favorably or unfavorably, and then ask likelihood to vote for the person, you're going to get a different result than if you flip those questions. So what if it, because pollsters put in biasing, does that change the fact that it's really not the same script as that, at that point?
if we believe it met the statutory definition, and we may include it. If the questions were substantially similar in nature within this 30-day period.
Okay. That's all I have on polls for now.
Any further questions or discussion? Vice Chair.
Thank you. I agree with Commissioner Weintraub that I think that this poll in its particular set of questions, well, I appreciate the point that we don't want to create a standard where it's sort of easy to get around by just allowing someone to throw in one question that they're not really to evade this easily. I think in this case, it's really hard to argue that this was something that was a push poll or something that was passowing the candidate on whose behalf it was done. So, Mr. Chairman, at whatever appropriate time, I'd be happy to make whatever motions necessary to, I don't want to preclude any discussion. I just, at some point, we'll need a motion, and I'm happy to make it whenever it's appropriate.
Okay. So, any further discussion on this particular issue of polling, Commissioner Weintraub?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say I think that Commissioner McGann made a lot of interesting points about polls in general, and I'm happy to engage in that discussion on a broader basis and, you know, try and figure out where we want to go on that question. I understand why the auditors drew the conclusion that they did, you know, more than 500 phone calls, and I see how they got there, but I think that at the end of the day, I don't need to be exactly where you already are, Commissioner McGann. I might get there someday, but I don't need to be there today. All I need to know is this one's an easy one because of the PASO question for me.
Commissioner McGann.
I appreciate that. That's why I'm not going to waste all day on what's a poll and what's not a poll. But it is something we need to think about for the future because we don't want to leave it in a situation where some people think they need disclaimers and some people don't, and what's a real poll and what's not a real poll and all that. And polling is its own creature. If Congress wanted to include polls, they would have added poll. And, you know, phone banks and polls, voter ID is not a poll. And hopefully we can talk more and go through all this and you know, I got a bunch of articles and all kinds of things and all that, but that's enough for polling. Can I keep going on the next?
Sure. Commissioner Walt, did you want to weigh in on
the other direction? Because I think what looks like a poll isn't always necessarily a poll, and I think you can ask two questions in one, and it's not so much the number of the questions, but it's how it's directed. And in some cases, for example, it's easy to say a poll is a poll if you say, do you favor so-and-so or so-and-so? But if you lead off with an emotional attack against one and then you attack the other with a different way, okay, the first one, does he beat his wife versus the second one, he misses meetings or something like that, it changes the, you know, people begin to make judgments because they're asked their opinion. Does it make you more or less likely? And all of a sudden they're making a commitment, it's less likely or more likely. So it can have a powerful effect on people's opinions, informing them and also just building prejudice for or against. In this case, I think there was, it was lopsided. Whether it was so lopsided that it's a PASO or not, I think it was lopsided, but I think the votes aren't there to call it PASO. I think that's a close call. But I think you can have PASO and attack and still send a message in one direction. And this is a close to me as to one of those. If you look at the number of questions, the way they're phrased, and the way they generate negative, you know, the power of the question. There was one, you know, do you miss meetings? And the other one, you know, he's lining his pockets with city development funds. And by the way, by the time you get through with it, you have a overall, and maybe somebody would ask a negative question. Okay, Ford missed meetings, but he doesn't want to do it again. I think they said that, something like that. That's got to change. So you get those questions also giving a message as to how the problem could be ameliorated. So it's I recognize the distinction. Maybe it's a way we can define it more clearly in the future.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hear what Commissioner Walther is saying, but I think that, you know, if you look at the question that I read, it goes far beyond missing meetings. You know, they were hammering him on being associated with porn moguls and wanting to give the abortion pill to school children. I mean, it's pretty, there was some pretty inflammatory stuff in there. So I think it's, you know, for me, it's not that hard a call. But I respect what you're saying, and I think that in another case, you know, with different questions, I might come to a different conclusion on the PASO element.
Commissioner McGann?
Sure. I hear what Commissioner Walther's saying, but the reality is your first question on a real poll is not going to be, you know, did you know that the guy beats his wife? I mean, that's classic push poll, right?
Well, I agree.
You're going to have the battery of questions out of the gate about are you registered to vote, like, you know, likelihood of voting, you know, gender. There's all those sorts of things you build in part of your bias model, and then you get to the questions, and the order of questions matter, and they do, you know, reverse questions, and it depends on the order, but virtually every political poll done by a party or a campaign is going to be asking very harsh questions. And they may test their own guy, they may just test the other guy, but that's just how it is, and that's what pollsters do. And to me, what Congress did with the disclaimers and with FEA, with people using phones, is before BCRA, you didn't have to have disclaimers on phones at all because the commission couldn't develop a rule, and that was taken to be a green light to do phones, and one of the sponsors of the legislation was victim of, you know, a bunch of robocalls, which were essentially push polls, and he said, we're not doing that again, and all of a sudden you have to put disclaimers on your phone calls. How we leap from that concern to looping polls underneath the idea of essentially all hard money, when it's there's a lot of different reasons for doing polls, that's a stretch. I certainly agree if you do the push poll thing, that is something we have to be concerned about. But when you see these kinds of questions, even in a shorter version, I mean, it could be 20 questions. That could be a real poll. It depends on what kind of poll it is. You know, the question I didn't ask the auditors. Let's say you're doing a roll, which is you do a poll over many nights, and let's say you only have 200 calls a night. What's the sample there? Because you're going to take the last three nights on the roll, let's say you call Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Your Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday results are going to give you an average. That's your roll number. Thursday night you're going to call again. You drop off the Monday numbers, and you're going to get the roll number. What's the sample? Is it 600? Is it 200? Is it 800? And if the position is 500, it's a magic number, well, that doesn't seem to be what Congress would have done, because that just gets in the way of the science of polls. At the end of the day, polls are statistics. There are formulas. There's sample size. There's percentages. You know, it's the square root of the percentage times the percentage minus 1 divided by the sample size. That's your general polling formula. Now, there's other ways to get the biases there, and that's why you ask a lot of these questions about who you're going to vote for president and all this other stuff, because that narrows your margin of error. But all of this is the sort of thing I don't think the commission is in a position to really decide. And I have, you know, when we get into, well, maybe this poll is a real poll, maybe this is FEA, maybe it isn't, I think we need to think more in terms of what the pollsters themselves call a real poll, not when they're flacking for a particular client, but as a professional pollster, versus what they call a push poll. And we defer to them because they're the experts. We're not the experts in polling. I know enough to be dangerous, but I'm not a pollster. I know enough to know the jargon, but once you get past every pollster guards their methodology, even though that's just a fancy word for method, but they all call it methodology. And there's all sorts of things that go into polls that, if the rule is because it references a federal candidate and it sort of sounds like they're saying nice things about federal candidates or not so nice things, and there's more than 500 calls, that's every poll. If Congress was going to regulate every poll, they would have said so. But maybe we take a look at what the pollsters themselves say are polls. These polls are clearly real polls. And, you know, the two questions were 100,000 calls with two questions saying, did you know he beats his wife? And I hope you remember that on election day. That's a push-pull, right? That's what but this other stuff is not. So okay, that's so my pitch on polls. If maybe move on to the other findings.
Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
Just to cut to the chase on the other finding with the invoice. You have, as I understand it, some invoices addressed to one entity that the committee says that was wrong, it should have gone to the other entity. It came up in the oral argument. I noted at the time that this seems to be very common. Counsel for the committee that's being audited agreed. It seems to me it's very tough to make a finding when you have paper says one thing, an affidavit or a declaration, I don't recall which it was, saying something else, particularly when this has come up before. I dug back in my memory of commission folklore, and back in 96 on the convention audit, this came up where the invoices went to the wrong person and there was an affidavit and everything seemed to go away and the commission said fine. I think the auditor said fine. If I'm right on my recollection, and I think I do actually have some documents here that back it up, why are we now making a finding in this case when this has come up before, there wouldn't have been a recommended finding?
Well, with respect to the 96 convention, we saw notations on an invoice that indicated that these expenses were going to be paid by the RNC. So we asked the question. We got a declaration from the vendor himself, who was conducting all this activity for not only the convention but for the host committee. So in taking that declaration, we also had the vendor's general ledger and other documentation that more or less supported what the vendor was saying. No, this is not a cost that the RNC is paying. So we accepted that. In this case, we have a number of invoices from 11 vendors that all have specific wording that more or less indicates that these are candidate related. Family barbecue for Howard Ford Jr., Howard Ford Jr. campaign rally at the Swing Time Golf Course. So we don't have any declaration from the vendor in this case. We have a declaration from a Mr. Button, who is associated with the campaign, who only says to the best of his memory, these are generic campaign activities. So we believe there is a distinction of what happened in 96 versus what is before the commission today.
It's not uncommon, though, for this sort of thing to happen. Taking it out of the facts of the case before us, this does happen. I had an experience myself years and years ago, more than 5 years ago, so statute of limitations has run. But in 96... no matter how many times I told a particular landlord, do not make out the invoice to Dole for president, make it out to the state party I was working for, they just kept making it out to the candidate. People love to make out things to the candidate. So to me, it's not implausible, even if it is 11 invoices concerning the same event or series of events that to me happened around the same time. That's not implausible that was a mistake. I grant you that you do get to a point where there's probably enough invoices that make the same so-called mistake that you start scratching your head. But at best, to me, I'm not comfortable making a finding on this because at best it seems like an issue of fact. We can certainly find facts. We can probably do so in an audit. But I have some hesitancy in doing that when they actually have submitted some evidence that creates the issue, and they've said, look, we sent it to the wrong, it was addressed to the wrong committee. So I'm not sure we can, as a commission, make a finding on what's before us. And it may be better to not necessarily put a fine point on what really happened, because clearly if the invoices are correct, the committee has a problem. If the invoices are not correct and the committee is right that it was an honest mistake, they don't have a problem. So there's legal significance here. But to me, I really have trouble saying the committee has a legal problem based upon the facts. So maybe that's a way to have a non-finding or something, or something that flags the issue and doesn't. But that's probably a much longer discussion. But that's where I am on that, and I don't really want to take up more time and ask questions because it's easier just to stay where I am.
If I could just point out, when I was one thing that stood out to me when I was going through this campaign rallies issue was something that was in the memorandum to the auditors that was produced by the General Counsel's office, which talked about the evidence. There just was a scarcity of evidence either way. That really, unless there's more that's out there, there was language saying we have not uncovered any documentation or information either supporting or contradicting Mr. Button's declaration. There was no, you know, the Ford campaign did not use common rally vendors with the Tennessee Democratic Party. They did not uncover copies of invitations or announcements or specific dates of the rallies, and that we don't have a copy of Mr. Ford's campaign itinerary. Is that
that's
a fair statement? That
that's
really
correct.
Kind of what we're left with are the invoices on the one hand and the declaration of Mr. Button on the other. And I think that I think that the conclusion that the auditors reached in this particular with respect to the rallies is not an unreasonable one. For me, I think I share some of the same concerns with Commissioner McGann about do we have enough evidence, though, to really make a commission finding about whether or not this was, that we can say that this should have, was a coordinated party expenditure. And so I'm kind of where he is in that I just don't see a lot of evidence that points strongly in one direction or the other that's sufficient for me to make a finding one way or another, which means that maybe the best that we can do, at least I guess the best that I would feel comfortable with supporting, is just that the evidence wasn't sufficient to prove up that there was a coordinated expenditure in this particular matter. So that's kind of where I am, just because of the just the lack of evidence, total evidence, Commissioner McGann.
Just to clarify, there were some things in this finding, though, that the committee agreed were candidate-specific and subject to the coordinate. The water bottles actually had a candidate's name on it, and they said, yes, this is actually a candidate thing. But these rallies, that becomes very tough to start saying is a rally candidate-specific. And that was a good I'd forgotten that, Mr. Chairman, that the evidence – the characterization, there's not a lot here really either way, but I just wanted to clarify that there are some things here that are coordinated that the auditors found should be, and the committee has agreed that yes, they should have been. So the committee seems to know that there's a distinction, so that's good news, I guess.
Yeah. Further question, Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is hard. You know, we've got not a lot of evidence and some on either side, and I guess the question that I have, and I feel like I've asked this question before, so maybe I asked it at the hearing, is what could the party do to refute these? You know, it's 2 years later when we're getting this declaration. So, you know, the fact that he says, you know, this is my belief, you know, it's my recollection. I mean, what else is he going to say 2 years later? What do we, if let's say that the invoices really were wrong, what could they do to prove that years later?
Well, there's probably two things they could have done. They probably could have got some type of declaration from the vendors or got a declaration from somebody associated with the committee that was actually at one or two of these rallies, to make a more definitive statement that this is what went on or this is what didn't go on.
But, I mean, he says that he was responsible for coordinating all the rallies on behalf of the Democratic ticket in Tennessee, and he says, it is my belief that the 11 invoices were incorrectly invoiced to the Ford campaign, that were incorrectly invoiced to the Ford campaign, were part of the TDP's generic get-out-the-vote rallies on behalf of the Democratic ticket. Is my recollection that Harold Ford Jr. did not attend any of these rallies. Now, if he wasn't there, it seems to be, you know, kind of unlikely that that would have been. I mean, this isn't Alaska, where it's some huge state where the candidate might have been stuck on the other side of the state. It's Tennessee. I mean, how likely is it that they would have GOTV Harold Ford rallies without Harold Ford?
It's a difficult call. We're basing, does the physical evidence of the invoices outweigh the declaration? And we have these, a number of invoices that have all these notations on them concerning Ford in one shape or another. I mean, on every one of them, it is the Ford campaign, including some, like a family barbecue for Howard Ford. It's pretty strange. The bottled water that the committee agreed to, the only thing the invoice says, it was delivered to a location on October 14th, 2006. Two of the other rallies, one of them being the campaign rally at the Swingtime Golf Course, occurred on October 14th, and one of the other vendors provided food for a rally, a Ford rally, on October 14th. So it's just, we're basing it on the invoice and what the invoice is telling us versus what we believe that the declaration is not telling us.
And I also feel like those are the most probative, the ones that are on the same date as the Ford for Tennessee.
Yeah, and it has the bottled water, they agree to.
Bottled water. I mean, those are the hardest ones, I think. But I don't know. I think I may be with the chairman on just the sufficiency of the evidence, that it's kind of that we got them. You know, it's pretty even, I think, at this point in terms of what's more probative. So can we make a finding if we've got sort of a 50-50 chance? Maybe we're right, maybe we're wrong. Maybe the invoices are right. Maybe the vendors 2 years later they couldn't find anybody at the vendors who remembered anything about these invoices. I mean, that doesn't strike me as terribly unlikely that they had, it could have been perfectly legitimate. They just couldn't find the people anymore who had any recollection of it. This guy would remember it a little bit better because this was what he did. I don't know. I think I'm kind of with you guys on this one also.
Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Three thoughts. That's good to know. Second, if it's a tie, we know where tie goes, to the speaker. Couldn't resist. We finally have a tie. And third, taking a step back and thinking about McCain-Feingold and the purposes of what Congress, what the limits are there for and all that kind of thing, at the end of the day, this is a rally. This is not the more it's not the sort of spending that really has gotten Congress worked up and others worked up. I mean, it seems to me this is precisely the sort of thing that the law is designed to encourage. Rallies, real people showing up, waving signs and that kind of thing. And
water bottles?
Yeah, the water, water bottles. You know, you don't want people to be dehydrated. Put a candidate's name on it, and it just counts against that candidate's limit. I mean, it's not, that's pretty easy to figure out. But a rally itself, it's really tough to kind of split up the cost of a rally and that kind of thing, because the Democratic Party's going to have a rally that's going to help everybody. And instinctively, that makes sense. I mean, that's tough to sort of disprove because, well, of course the Democratic Party is going to have a rally that's going to help all their candidates, but that doesn't make it a coordinated expenditure. If this were something else, a TV ad or something, it'd be a much more difficult case. But here, it's a rally. This is kind of what people do, and it's really tough to sort of slice and dice a rally, and it's really tough to make a finding when you have some invoices, but we all know that happens. It's also plausible that it was a mistake. We've seen it in past commission action, and now not only that, but you do have, and it made a really good point, it seems like they do have the right person doing the affidavit, the person who coordinated, who would know, chasing down 11 vendors. I mean, you imagine going to Staples years later and saying, hey, you know what, you sent this invoice to the wrong, can you redo it? Well, it's very tough to do. And some may say, well, gee, the party could just reverse engineer this and really do a campaign rally and then say after the fact that it's a party rally. That's a lot of work to really go through all that, and at the end of the day, I keep repeating, it's a rally. People showing up and waving signs. There's not a lot of tangible cost other than these sorts of things to that. I think it's a positive thing, and I think if we actually make a finding that what they did was somehow wrong, it's going to make it more difficult to have these sorts of rallies, because you're going to have all sorts of micromanagement going on all kinds of things, and this is just not really the thing that I think Congress wants us to worry about. And this reminds me, think about 96, it reminds me that, remember the debate on the plastic silverware? In one of the, there was, I think it was the Dole audit, the plastic silverware came up, and there was the fireworks. Like a whole day was spent on certain fireworks. Do you remember that, Joe?
In the convention?
I think it was the Dole, actually the Dole camp audit, I think, came up on the primary, I think, where the fireworks were over a state line and they went on what state did it count against. And, you know.
That does not ring a bell.
No.
And I worked on that one a lot.
Yeah, I think it was Dole. Maybe there was another, but it feels like one of those things. Like, what are we doing? You know, it's not the kind of thing that we need to get in the way of. I think we need to encourage rallies and that sort of thing. So,
any further questions? Vice Chair.
Thank you. You know, whether we need to encourage rallies or not, I think that there's a specific question here about, and there's limits and there are, you know, there are rules that we're trying to make sure people that follow. And I think I agree with the chairman that this one is hard because, you know, in general, we tend to give a lot of weight to affidavits. I wish this affidavit spoke, you know, a little more closely to these particular events or something more than just his belief. But I do think here we just have perhaps a genuine issue of material fact. And I agree that this is a very reasonable conclusion for the audit division to have reached. I think it seems unlikely to me that these many vendors made the same mistake over and over. Perhaps there were some that were mistakes and others that were actually supposed to be for a family barbecue for Harold Ford Jr. And, you know, I've never had barbecue from Little Porky's, but Tennessee barbecue tends to be pretty good, and, you know, it could be expensive by the time you feed a bunch of people. I don't know how big Harold Ford's family is. So I appreciate the audit division's recommendation. I think from my perspective, when we have an affidavit, we tend to give that some significant weight. And so in this case, I would agree that what we probably just have is an inability to reach any particular finding in this matter, at least from my perspective.
Any further discussion? If not, Commissioner Walter.
Thanks. I mean, just from the point of view of trying to prove our case, and if you ever got to that point, it would be very hard to contradict it. I mean, I think the affidavit is somewhat circumspect, but nevertheless, there's an affidavit and put somebody in the stand that's going to be more memory will come back, and then all you have is these, you know, invoices. So I tend to, I'm skeptical, but I don't think we can, you know, really prove our case very well.
Let's see. Do we have a motion? Vice Chair.
I think I will. Could I attempt one motion?
Sure.
If I could perhaps. Would it? Could I ask our procedurally, our counsel, if we could make one motion that included some things approving and some things not approving findings?
Yes, you certainly may.
Okay. And I assume my colleagues will correct me if I have misunderstood anything. With respect to the audit division's finding and the report of the audit division, with respect to finding one, I would move that we approve the finding with respect to automated phone banks, but not with respect to polls or the 11 invoices for the campaign rallies, and approve finding two.
I think that's correct.
Sort of that would be a question, I guess. If that's correct, I would so move.
If I could just ask one question with regard to the polls, unlike the rallies, where I think most of us feel like that's kind of a jump ball or a tie, that the evidence is just a little bit inconclusive, that reaching the conclusion that we just couldn't come to a finding, I think, is the appropriate one. With regard to the polls, it sounds like there are at least a majority of us who believe that these polls were permissible, and I wonder if maybe the instruction should be that the report be modified to reflect that the commission believe that these polls complied with the relevant regulation.
Perhaps it would be better to split it then, because I could make one motion with respect to everything but the polls, and then perhaps a separate motion on the polls. Would that be okay?
Yeah, I mean, either way, they'll be approved.
Yes, so, but I had anticipated that my colleague might want to vote differently on the polls.
I think I'll probably vote differently on this one.
Okay. So I will try again. I move that we approve finding one in the Audit Division's report with respect to automated phone banks and finding two with disclosure of disbursements, and not approve the finding with respect to campaign rallies.
Does everyone understand the motion?
Now, you give me that one more time. I'm sorry, I was just paging through here.
Approving the Audit Division's finding on phone banks and on finding two disclosure of disbursements and not on campaign rallies.
Does everyone understand the motion? Is there any discussion on the motion? We're ready to vote. Ready?
I think so.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion passes 6-0. Vice Chair.
Okay. I move that with respect to the poll issue in finding one, that the Audit Division revise that discussion to indicate that the Commission concluded the polls were permissible.
I think under the relevant reg, I think that I think we can give the general direction and then instruct the audit to make the appropriate changes in the report. Mr. Stoltz.
There's just one other little twist with the polls that I think everybody agrees with. It came up originally because they had them in Levin. And I think everybody agrees that wasn't the right place, and including the committee, because the committee's
right. The committee's
it.
Already made that amendment.
Yeah, they've already made that
so
amendment.
The questions
so
the polls are FEA.
Okay.
Right,
so
and that left just the FEA question.
Because they're not FEA, we need to find it.
So they. Right? So as reported, so as currently reported, as the amended reports, permissible as.
I think the report would probably still point out that we had to move it from 11.
Sure.
To,
yeah. But as current as the currently amended reports
yes.
indicate.
Any discussion on the motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you, Mr. Nerland.